So I want to make sure that you're all in the right session that you signed up for, a careful ending, perspectives of a death doula. So if that's where you want to be, welcome to our session. We're going to be pretty casual. If you have questions during the session, I think Corey will be happy to take your questions. So I'll probably leave this with you in case you need to, or tell me if you want me to hand this to somebody. Okay. And then you have the evaluation form, which is in your program. Please fill out your evaluation form at the end of the day and turn it in on your way out. This is really very, very important for us for planning for the next conference. So, you know, like, we take what you say and then we get speakers of what you're asking for the next time. So I'm going to be making sure that we're finishing on time. So I'll give you some cues when it's when we're running out of time. Any questions? Okay. Well, I want to introduce Corey Levin, and she's going to tell you a little bit about herself, and then I will let her just take it away.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me? Good. Louder, I heard? Okay. Yes, I can speak louder. Thank you all for joining this breakout session. It's a gift to have Annette here because 2 years ago I went to her breakout session and then she signed up to be the host today. We also were on the committee together, which was a really neat experience. So I'm feeling all the feels today, so you can feel them with me. A careful death, perspective of a death doula. Who in this room has heard of a death doula before? Okay, a lot of you. Has anybody experienced using one, or have you been a death doula for a loved one? I see. Yep. Okay. I'd love to hear from you all. We'll see how time goes today. A non-medical approach to diagnosis, healing, and dying better. So I'm hoping to share about myself today and a little bit about the profession, give you some practical information to take home, some common facts, and then we'll have a Q&A. I brought a dear friend, Marian, who's sitting right over here in blue. One of the committee members asked that I bring in somebody who's used the service of a death doula to help in the breakout session. So Mary kindly agreed to coming today and will give you a little bit about, give her perspective from what we, a shared experience. So, so the term doula is Greek for a woman servant. My work started as a birth doula as I was raising my daughters. I found myself in the birth space at the beginning of life, and now I'm in a space of the end of life. I'm the owner of Navigating Elderhood, a private in-home care business offering skilled care so individuals can live their lives and age at home as long as possible with support from myself and my team. We work with the entire family, and I think of the services that we provide as filling in the gaps for care that's needed. And I came to this work about 10 years ago thinking I wanted to be a hospice nurse, so I did go back to school to get higher education and then quickly realized my skill set was more person-centered care, not in institutions and checking boxes, because what I wanted to offer wasn't in that arena. So I kind of found my own path. I became an INELDA-trained end-of-life doula around the COVID time and met Nina Gerton, who you all just listened to speak in the keynote at Shalom Hospice. It was a group of professional women who were mostly retired and treated it as a profession. So I was with very skilled women doing very important work and learning from the best in Minnesota. And many other states were even talking about the program that we had here and how robust it was. So being bedside with individuals during COVID as a medically trained professional and being able to help people at end of life during a time when the world was just shaking and families couldn't be together. So it was an interesting time to dive right in, so I dove in deep. I came to this work by coincidence and quickly learned that there was a necessity. When I would start to tell cheer moms, because I have a daughter who was a cheerleader traveling the country for 5 years, what do? They're like, where were you when I needed you? Or when I was at the checkout line at the grocery store, the cashier and I would get talking about my day, and I would share about my day. And so it becomes common talk. So that's a little bit about me and how I came to this work, or one of the most impactful stories, I should say, was, I think it was about 10 years ago, like I said. We lived in Eden Prairie, and I had a neighbor who was a social worker, and her grandma was at end of life. And she called me in. I wasn't quite a trained doula or talking about my work, but she knew I had done some healing work with individuals. And her grandma was a hippie, and I was known as the neighbor hippie. So let's call in Corey. She knows what to do in these times that are unknown. And she, as a social worker, was complaining the family wasn't following her steps. And I said, however I can help, let's go. So she picked me up. We went over to her grandma, who was in home. She had a hospice team that was providing a little bit of care. And then she had her aunt, who was sitting at the table mixing herbs and making some bone broth, because that's what grandma wanted. And then her mother was very upset that they weren't giving grandma enough morphine. So there was this kind of conflicting, as there is with families and end of life, experience of like what to do, what not to do. And then Rachel says, like, I want to bring in some comfort for grandma. And she says, I've been researching all night, this Reiki, this healing touch, I don't know what you do. And I said, we'll just go do it together. And she says, should I come in? And I said, come in the room. So as I mentioned, you know, there's a house full of family members at grandma's end of life. And Rachel and I walk in the door, and I invite her to sit down with me. And I show her how she can hold her grandma's hand, how she chooses. And she went underneath and held grandma's hand, and I went through kind of my technique, the exercises that I go through that just is what I'm trained to do, and then intuitively what I felt was needed. And Rachel had mentioned that grandma hadn't really been responsive for a few days. And halfway through the session, grandma voiced, I can feel myself separating. So that was the first true experience of death being a spiritual experience for me. And so it appeared that Rachel was also doing some Reiki in the room. There was a lot happening in that room. I call it energetically. And I remember about 45 minutes passes and our time was done. It was not a long experience. I went to put my hand on the handle to exit the room, and grandma puts her hands at her heart center and looks right at me. So I was like, wow, whatever's happening is happening, and it's doing what it's supposed to do. So that was my first experience that really brought me into this work, and trusting, as Nina always says, my mentor, trusting the process, right? And I got a phone call that grandma passed very comfortably within hours. So I think that's what many of us hope is a peaceful passing for not only our loved ones, but how we would like to die. And I guess I'll ask that question in the room. Have you thought about how you want to die? Has anyone? Yeah, I see some head nods. And how many of us have actually shared it with our loved ones? Actually voiced it, yeah. Well, I hope to give you a few nuggets, a few takeaways today of things and ways to prompt the conversation, whether it's something you just personally write out, and I can give you a prompt to leave with if you're a journaler, or call your best friend, or however you do it, your daughter, your mom. But having these spoken wishes are are very important. What do death doulas do? Well, we work really well in messy spaces and with unknowns, that's for sure. And that's kind of where I find my ground. That's where I find my place. So we listen and hold space, meeting people where they're at. We offer non-medical holistic care and options for a dying person and their loved ones. Many of us doulas bring different skill sets to our profession. As I mentioned, I happen to be in the healing space with my background. Many of my friends are really strong in the grief area as well, and you know, some are medical trained professionals, and I think there's just a lot of us that bring a lot of skill in different angles. We educate families on the process for peaceful passing. It's never too early to hire a doula. Some clients I've met right there at bedside, I didn't really know them when they were conscious, and then I've had friends reach out and say, will you be my doula? And I said, well, then let's talk. What do you want? So there's also some fun humor that goes along with this work, even though it can feel really heavy. My now 13-year-old's like, Mom, you're always talking about death. You must be, like, excited to die or something. And I guess I'm just trying to get comfortable with it because it's probably my own fear. Like, we all have fear around it. So a fun story around the holidays, my girls and my family was playing a game where you have to list 5 things before the buzzer goes off. And one was, what do you celebrate? And my 13-year-old says, death! And I was like, yes! That's the doula's daughter. So I guess, you know, it can be talked about, and, you know, I like that she brings the humor to my life, because I don't have that great sense of humor, as well as my clients bringing good humor. Death doulas also help develop wishes and put them into vigil plans. Part of the vigil that I can explain with my experience is using all of our scents and noting those. We talked a little bit this morning about our hearing is the last to go. And so, you know, speaking to the dying. So when we talk about what we want at end of life, we talk about who we want there, what we want to feel, what we want to see, what we want to smell, what we want to hear. And those are some of the written wishes that I've done with folks. I think of myself as an advocate. I always have, from the birth doula work and now to the end of life work. And in advocating, we fulfill spoken wishes. So I'm looking forward to sharing with Mary my experience with her mom and her. Her mom had this 5 wishes document in her binder for many days, and I said, well, should we get it out? Should we fill it out together? And the day after we finished labeling all the pictures, who and the date, we went ahead and we filled out the wishes, so they were written, and in there it was to bring Mom home, let her die at home. So the last incident that she was in the hospital, we got to bring her home based on her known wishes. So little things like that that are in this line of work to support individuals with those wishes. And that advocacy, for me, feels really good when we can kind of full circle and let the things happen that we would like to happen, which is not always the case. Prioritizing comfort over cure. We're all going to die. We don't really all know when. There is some spiritual beliefs of there's a death contract that's already been made for all of us. But I think that's probably one of the challenges that I see and feel myself is the unknown. And that's the neat space, too, where you can explore and question. Death doulas also provide resources for post-death support to families. My job is to love people, be authentic, speak my truth, and breathe. Before we talked a little bit about walking being a luxury and now a necessity. So I have to work very hard at grounding every day with the clients and the energetic load of the work that I choose to carry. So mindfulness practices, breath work integrated into all that I do. My job is not to fix or save people. There are people who don't like me, and that's okay. I used to think I could do it all, but I'm getting a little wiser as I get older. I can't do it all. I don't want to do it all anymore. So I don't please everyone, and I don't hold it together. So it's okay to cry, and there are moments that I have to hold it together, but I do plenty of crying. So I already asked the question, have you thought about how you want to die? So that's a takeaway if you'd like. What is one element that would make your death comfortable? Sometimes we talk about it being beautiful, but it doesn't always have to be thought of as being beautiful because it's not always beautiful. But for those of you who have thought of it, does anybody feel comfortable sharing? And we can pass around this fun little toy and answer something that you've thought about.
I was afraid I was going to drop it. Be careful. I want to die at home. And we've already talked about, I originally thought I wanted to die in one of the bedrooms. And my wife said, no, you don't. Which it's like, I don't know, this is my death. but then we agreed that I could be in the dining room, which kind of freaks me out, but because we have French doors that open out to a deck, and I'm a sun person, and I want that bed to be shoved out there as much as possible. So that is the one thing. And like you, I talk to my daughter, who's 41, all the time, and her eyes just roll back in her head about all the different things that I want, like shave my head, shave my mustache, take care of my beard, do all the things. So, yeah, so that's how I want to go.
I also want to die at home unless I'm living with my children. Then I don't want to have them have that memory. And I also want really, really short fingernails with no polish. It's in my advance directive. anybody else want to share?
I just want to. Oop, no, here come. I don't want to share, but I just want to say, advance directives. Can you please just touch on that? Because that is vital.
Absolutely.
Yes. And yeah, right now, would you like to? Or can we? Okay. Great. So real quick, I have the five wishes, a sample. So I only have three. So take one. You can print them out online yourself. This is one option. And yes, we will talk a little bit about that. Thank you. Yes. Does anybody else care to share what they... Yes, please.
I have had migraines through my life. So as someone who's suffered with migraines, I put down in my five wishes document that I do not want to have a migraine at the time that I'm dying. I don't think about other pain as much as this is not what I want to be dealing with in my last moments.
I don't know if I can throw that far.
Is this a mic? Oh, it is. That's so cool. Honestly, I didn't think about it until you just said it. And I have no problem being in a hospital. But I only have one child who's autistic. The thought of having to put this on her is really hard to think about. And I hope that... hearing about what you do, I hope that there's somebody there that can take on what maybe she can't handle. I don't know if my spouse will be alive still. I don't have many people younger than me in my life, and I'm an older mom. So just hearing what you guys do makes me want to put some kind of plan into place to have that there for her sake, to have somebody there to really, like, coordinate and take on that load that maybe she won't be able to handle herself.
Anybody else want to share? Okay, one more. Yes, please. So this is being recorded so we can all re-listen to it. That's why the microphone's going to everyone. Yeah.
So I took care of my mom for 10 years, and she had Alzheimer's. And so we did this planning way in advance when she first got diagnosed. But I was so grateful for her vigil plan because it meant that during the time that she was dying, I didn't have any decisions to make, down to she had a playlist, she had candles that she bought that she wanted in the room, she had poetry she wanted read to her, like specific books that she had a list of things she wanted read out loud. She created a sign to go on the room, on the door of the room, that said, if you walk into this room, please know you're forgiven. And like all of that made her death incredibly beautiful for my family. And inspired me to be a death doula. And as a result, I hope I'm not going to die for 30, 40 years, but I have a playlist that I add to almost every day. If I hear a song, I just stick it on the playlist. And I have picked candles that I want to have. And bringing that level of intentionality, I think it just helps the people around you to feel safe in the space and know, especially if you're journeying with someone who has dementia, that you're doing the things that they would have wanted and that they would vocalize if they were able to.
That was beautiful.
So the one little thing I'm just going to draw out from your story was, I feel like when those things are, let's call it organized or spoken, then we can do all the other work of grieving and doing whatever we need to do. So we have that, what is under control, what is clear, done. So the rest, it allows more space. So it's not so messy. So that's kind of how I think of what your mom did, was give you that gift, right, of clarity, understanding of those wishes. So thank you. Okay, I'm going to keep going. So in giving some take-home facts and information and practical stuff, I put up here, Barbara Carnes is an award-winning end-of-life educator. She's an RN, an author from Gone From My Sight, and she has a list of 10 things. So you can also be on her newsletter mailing. I find her wonderful. I did see her movie. So dying is not a medical event. She calls it a personal experience. We were talking about pain over here. Dying is not painful. Disease can be, but is not always. There's a gradual process of dying from disease. You must have an advance directive, which tells medical professionals how we want to live until we die. And in addition to medical professionals, family members and loved ones. A terminal illness is a gift of time. You can do and say what you want and done. Get multiple opinions on treatment options, and that's the space I'm mostly working in right now with my profession, is working with people who are getting diagnoses and wanting to get information and understanding to know what's next for them. So many of you probably also play advocate roles like that, but getting treatment options is very important, and then deciding. Not all hospices are alike. Be open, talk about feelings, as we talked about today, concerns and fears with those close. This is not a time for secrets, but a time to be used to let others know that their time with you is limited. Everyone is afraid to some degree when we approach end of life. Everybody dies. That's our final act of living, and somehow we have the power to choose. Sometimes we have the power to choose what it looks like. So those statements you could pick apart a little bit, or I could pick apart a little bit, but I thought that was a nice list. Another experience for me recently, it was last summer, I saw this movie, The Last Ecstatic Days, and I'm pretty sure Netflix is now showing it, and email me later if you want more information. I don't know this right now, but I recently saw on social media that it's easier to access, but I accessed this through an intuitive astrologer who was showing the film. So he happened to be a Jewish man who was dying of, it was a cancer, I believe. But what I remember from the film was death feels like going to the center of the heart, and it's a full journey within. So this man kept talking about his personal experience and his barriers being lessons to what's next. So it felt like a very natural death of a man who wanted to do his work while he was living here versus when he crossed over. Our stories are not finished and are being taught until the end. So he used medicine, Western, Eastern medicine. He used faith. But his, like, deep wisdom is amazing. So that's the best I can share about the movie. So it was pretty powerful. And the filmmaker, too, who asked to do, I mean, just the whole story behind it is pretty amazing. And his mom came on the Zoom meeting and spoke. I think she was at an ashram and came on and spoke and answered a few questions about the experience. So, again, leaning in towards death and not having fear, and then finding these, what I find, beautiful things. Is that it? I just pushed something. I think I pushed something on my screen. Can I ask? Barbara Carnes. Yep. I think it's K-A-R-N-E-S. Did I do something on my end?
Did it freeze?
I don't know what it did. I pushed the arrow and... Of course this happens.
That's not what we want to do.
I know what... It's that timer. See, there was a timer on there and I said, is it going to run out on me? I'm okay not projecting it. I would, if we can just get it up on here. I think I'm going to go into introducing Mary, if that's okay. Well, you just, if you can pull it up on here, that would be amazing. If not, yeah. Okay, so Mary and I met 14 years ago. Oh, you need a microphone.
I know she does.
Mary and I met 14 years ago at a company event. My husband worked for a company, and her mom was the V mom, the virtual mom. And she adopted me that night. We traded bracelets. Mm-hmm. That's how we met.
It's a true sign of friendship.
Yes.
Yes.
Her mom said she was adopting. Yeah, I remember that. And then about, is it 7 years ago? Is that safe to say? You called me in because so Mary's mom, Carol, had some known disease and a few hospital incidences. And you called in, you said, you think I could help? And at that time, I was mainly caregiving, care advocating.
Yep, about 4 years ago only.
Was it 4 years
ago? No.
Okay. But it was about 8 months we were together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary, can you So I knew Corey was transitioning into being a death doula. And once it finally hit me that my mom was approaching the end of her life, as much as she did not want to admit it, I called Corey and pulled her in and said, okay, I think my mom needs some assistance to start the process of processing. And I need help with that because being, she has two daughters, me and my sister. My sister is autistic and has cerebral palsy, so there was going to be no help there. So not only was I going to have to support my mother through this process, I'm also going to have to support my sister through this process and myself. And I'm Lutheran, so anytime we'd had a death in the family, we'd just drive down to a good old Lutheran church and it would just be taken care of. And I knew after Corey had started talking to my mother that she had very different wishes. And so that was a bonus for us. We knew Corey. We had a relationship already. So my mom was very open to working with Corey on this journey. And Corey helped a lot. An impact we had was that Corey helped my mom begin to process that we need to get some things ready for Mary. We need to have the five wishes written so she knows exactly what to do, what you wish for, to take that burden off of her. And that, as mentioned prior, was one of the best things that could have happened. So just knowing that we knew exactly what she wanted to do when the day that we realized she was probably going to be passing in the next few days up came. I knew exactly what I do. I jumped right into action. We had the plan. I made all the phone calls. We had all our friends on standby because one of her wishes was also to die at home. And so we arranged with the hospital to transport her home. And I rode in the ambulance with her. Something I will never forget because we basically redrove the path to my childhood home where I grew up. And so she didn't live very far from that. And so we got home and all her friends were there and Corey was there and I could just walk in and just be and just start to grieve myself. So knowing that I'd had just a few hours left with her, but knowing that Corey was there, we had hospice there. So that was the medication was taken off my plate. Corey was there to help me and help my mom get comfortable, was just an amazing experience.
That you didn't know before you had the experience of working with Corey?
All the things. I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. I wasn't uncomfortable with dying, and I knew that death was coming for my mom, but that's why I brought Corey in, because I knew I didn't know anything. And I knew that she had a lot of resources.
I'm going to pause. She did an amazing job Can we just rewind for 2 seconds? So as we talked about families and conversation and communication and needs, are not everyone's always on the same page. Carol mentioned it was helpful having me there to help the conversation between Mary and Carol, her mom, and then everybody could kind of get more on the same page with whatever we were talking about that day, which I don't remember. But it was nice to hear her say that from her perspective. And with everyone having a different personality and a different perspective on how things should be done and all the things involved, Mary showed up. And so it was just as incredible of an experience for me to do the work that I just fell into. But to watch Mary stand up and not be afraid to touch her mom, to hold space. I mean, Mary, you also came and your mom was so proud of you. I mean, from brushing her hair to holding her hand. I mean, and it ended up not just being a few hours. So you texted me and said that at 3:00, the ambulance was going to bring your mom home. And then all her friends, they rallied. They have a very strong group of friends, mostly female. Mm-hmm. And what was really neat for me was the lack of fear she had. So she taught me in that moment how to move in. And you surprised me. I was really proud of you.
Only because I had support, right?
It was.
I knew where to go. I had resources. So yeah. I was comfortable there.
Yeah.
You help support other people other than me too. That's the great thing about a death doula is they're there for everyone.
Yeah.
So if you have friends or you have aunts or you have people who are uncomfortable or don't know what to do, the death doula can help with them too and help keep the calm. And that's what I wrote down. I was brainstorming these questions last night and I said that Corey was the calmness in the period of emotion and confusion. You know, as you can imagine, if you've been through it or if you're going to be going through it, it's very hard. You're emotionally, mentally, physically exhausted and taxed. And to have someone there who is just there to help and guide is amazing.
And the cat.
Oh my God.
That is in the picture up here that I'd like to show everyone. Can we get to the pic? What kind of cat it is?
Well, she had three.
Who's the big one?
Oh, Dewey. Admiral Dewey, he's a Maine Coon.
Maine Coon. Has anyone seen these cats? Okay, so this Maine Coon was massaging her the whole, what was it, about 12, 18 hours,
yeah.
I feel like.
And the other two cats were up on high pedestals looking down. It was pretty cool. And because the animals got to be there, when we had to rehome them, it was a very easy process. Because they understood that a member of their pack died and that they too could move on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Corey that pointed it all out. I was just sitting there, right? We knew we had about 24 hours. She lasted 25 because the doctor said 24. So she made it to 25 because that's my mom. So always remember that their personalities will still be there in the end too. So she's stubborn. She's a stubborn lady. But yeah, the cats for sure. That was awesome. Touch is so important. And I was in the hospital. Before we got her home, and Corey, I was on the phone with her. She's like, touch your mom. Hold her hand. And, you know, I wasn't even 40 yet when this was happening. And so I didn't know what to do other than sit there. And so I just sat on my phone and scrolled. She's like, call Molly, my daughter, her only grandchild. Get her on the phone. And so then Molly sang on a recording. And I played that for my mom. And so that was amazing. And then other than that, when she came home, it was me and her best friends. And we sat around and we talked like we were just having tea and coffee. And, you know, I pulled up Jim Gaffigan because I wanted to show them a funny skit. Because sadly enough, the day after she died, I was going to go see Jim Gaffigan. But again, that's taking care of yourself and continuing to do the things to take a break from grieving. And so I showed my her friends a video of Jim Gaffigan and part of his skit. And we're laughing, and I swear my mom laughed. You could see just a kind of, I'm sure it was just a muscle reaction, but you never know. But just she kind of went, huh. And I'm like, that's right, it's funny. And then, yeah, even up to the moment she died, we were going through photos and talking. And then, yeah, about that last bit of morphine I gave her, I could tell she was leaving. So, and then we just stopped and honored her in those last few moments. Corey being there, and just reminding us that, okay, here we go. This is the next step. So.
The hospice felt very supportive as well, in my experience. Mm-hmm. There was a woman who came who brought a whole thing of essential oils. A lot of the continuing education with hospice nurses now are in education around more holistic practices around end of life. So that was super neat to see her kind of move right in. It was just like this effort. Your mom was so amazing and gave so much, and I feel like she got back a lot of that. So.
She still had her voice at the end. And that's my mom. She has to have the last word. So remember those personalities are still there.
Yes, they are.
Well, I have a question. Can I ask a question, too?
Of course.
Can you explain the difference between what the hospice social worker does and what you do, other than maybe you have more access or more time with them? I don't understand what the difference is there.
Yeah. Rosie... Come on in.
Isn't hospice more medical?
Yeah, so in my experience, I think of the work I do as filling in the gaps. I do a lot of things, right, except for deal with medicine and money kind of thing. But the social worker with Carol specific, she offered, you know, grief support She wanted to share knowledge about the death process if the family was interested. It's an interesting time to come in and offer something when you don't know what you need. And I feel like my skill set is I feel like I can meet people exactly where they're at versus giving them having a checklist of a job to provide information. So in this experience, the woman was lovely, but it just didn't feel like that's what the family needed in that moment, that paperwork or that resource. I know she came to the home once when I was there, maybe more than once. However, social worker, so I'm going to, not in this specific situation, I currently have taken it upon myself to connect with local hospices and provide education from whoever it is, whether it's the social worker or the outreach person, the different titles I'm not quite certain on. But they will come and, so there are hospices in our community who will come educate families before your loved one even needs to go on hospice or if you're considering at no cost without a doctor's note. So I think it's really nice to know what is offered, and that's the advocate role that I like to provide for families and share in community that you can get ahead versus feel like you're always behind. And you don't know what you don't know, but there is a lot of beautiful support offered in hospice. And it's kind of a bad word to go on hospice, like, you know, and scary. But I just think it's nice to know that there is education, and the timing is the hard part. But what I do know that many folks that I come across think that the hospice will provide all the things, meaning 24/7 care, cleaning, right, medicine. And so there needs to be that advocate role of if you don't want your loved one to be alone, someone needs to make sure that they are not alone because there's not going to be a hospice person providing that bedside care all the time. I like to think of myself as partnering with, right, and teaming up with. Did I answer your question? Okay. Yes, please. Oh, will you use the microphone? Thank you.
There you go. I'm going to throw it to you because that's the whole
point. When do people typically reach out to you? Like, do they do it in the beginning? Do you do it before you call hospice and say, we'd like you to come meet our family, blah, blah, blah?
Good question. So I've attended as a volunteer when I was with Shalom Hospice. You know, you just meet them right in the moment as they're dying. And then I have a friend who's well in 57. We're talking like friends. And then I get a lot of folks that are adult children who are like, my mom needs someone. This is really stressing me out, you know, but I have to get my mom's approval before, you know, how do we do this? And so there, whenever is the right time for you, it's never too early to, you know, talk about these things. Like I said, I talk about them with my 13-year-old and my husband. You know, if something happens to me tomorrow, this is what I want. You know, we're hoping that our aging population is closer to death than the younger folks, but I don't think it's ever too early. And so I think a lot of it is the challenges I've experience are there's one member that really wants it and then they have to get agreement, you know, the other parties to agree. So yeah.
So hospice is a Medicare program allowable for folks who are terminally ill for up to 6 months before end of life, and Medicare pays for that. Is there a program, or are death doulas supported under like a long-term care program insurance, or how is that paid for? Because it sounds like a wonderful partnership mm-hmm. and a wonderful idea. Is it covered under any insurances? Is it a supplemental program help cover the cost of that, or is it just a private pay?
I'm going to actually turn the microphone over to Nina Gerton to help answer that question. She also was going to help answer about Minnesota Death Collaborative, which is an organization that she helped found. So do you want to answer?
Yeah.
Thank you.
When we become death doulas, part of honoring death is that we do some pro bono work, we do some volunteer work, and then we also do private pay. So now that's theoretical, and I don't know that if all death doulas do or don't. I know I do. So and I also do sliding scale, and I also allow people to determine what they can pay. So I had a client who paid me $5 an hour, and I let her pay me $5 an hour because that was her valuation, and she had nothing. It was very important to her, and I do sliding scale because there are some people that can afford to pay more. And so, as you know, the universe, you know, and mm-hmm. I believe that the universe always works it out. And so I don't really worry about what is my median and you have to pay this and all that. And it's a really great segue into, if I can just talk about MNDC
Please.
For a minute. The Minnesota Death Collaborative, when we founded it, there were seven of us that founded it. Our intention or our desire was for the Death Collaborative to be a central resource. And so we have all sorts of professions that are related to death. So it's not just death doulas. It's funeral directors. It's death photographers. It's respite care. It's people that help with liquidating estates. It's lawyers. It's elder care lawyers. And what's beautiful about that, at this memorial service yesterday, the husband was a photographer and he had things all over. I mean, the way that they set up the room is all this huge photography, like huge pieces were all over the room. And the wife said to me, I just don't know what I'm going to do with this. You know, I don't know what to do with all of this stuff. And I said, I happen to know someone who's in the Death Collaborative that liquidates, and I'll be happy to get you connected with her. And so really for me as a death doula, I do a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats, as they said this morning. However, I don't wear all the hats. And so for me to be able to have a funeral director that I trust and I know that I've networked with, I can refer her to have people that know things about natural burial or natural organic reduction, or can we go to Switzerland for a termination? And so we know all those things. Or if we don't know all those things, we have people that do know all those things. So we talk about medical aid in dying and where can we go for that. I have a lot of questions about that. We talk about voluntarily stopping eating and drinking. A lot of questions about that. And not every doula does that. And so there's a lot of gratitude to be able to work. And, you know, you talked about you have a network of people that you work with. Mm-hmm. I don't do the physical labor of changing a person and changing the sheets and all of that. Doulas do the practical, the emotional, and the spiritual work. I just don't choose to do all of that. And so I have a group of CNAs that I work with, a group of RNs that I work with that want to help me in my work and do their work. So that's what the collaborative is about. So it's the central resource for anything death. And people will talk, you can call them, ask questions. You can ask Corey or I questions. There's no limit to it. And if we don't know, we'll refer you. I mean, I think that's the beauty of it. So, yeah.
Yep. Thank you. Another question. Hi. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to comment on
the role and opportunities for a death doula in the situation where the person with dementia, while they are still clear and making decisions, has determined that they'd like to end their life at a specific time. And I know that might be tricky to answer because it's not perfectly legal here, but what can you talk about that?
Back to what Nina spoke of is the voluntary stop eating and drinking. So I'm just going to reiterate what I think I heard you said. So there's an individual who has Alzheimer's dementia, and then there's somebody speaking on their behalf. And when that person is the... They're still speaking on their own behalf.
To have a limit to
yes. Yeah. So Nina actually was a part of... So I have not been a part of one of those experiences before, personally. But when I talk to the families that I'm currently serving, where I go is, we've been doing this forever. We just haven't necessarily called it something. Like, this has been going on for years and years and years. It's a natural process of dying, of stopping eating and drinking. And that is legal in this state. And then, to my understanding, with Nina, the family that you were supporting, it was getting the hospice on board with those decisions. Was that the piece of communication that needed to be really secure to help her wishes come to fruition with Cheryl?
Yeah, there are two separate cases. One was a woman who had chronic pain. She was in her...
Two separate cases. One woman had chronic pain. She was in her 80s. And she said, I'm just done. I can't do it any longer. And her daughter was one of the other founders. She's a therapist. And she brought me in as the doula. And so we talked to Ruth about how difficult, you know, it was going to be for her just to stop eating. She didn't have a terminal diagnosis. So without a terminal diagnosis and based on various criteria, she couldn't get onto hospice. So, but she did contact her primary care physician, and she said, here's what I'm going to do. And she actually got this guy on board. And what ended up happening was on day four, as she was sleeping more and we were seeing, because she had stopped, she had already stopped. And so on day four of my being on board, she was starting, there were shifts that were happening. And so we called the primary. He gave the order for hospice because of organ failure. And so she was able to get onto hospice. Mm. Never used any of the comfort meds, though. And she would wake up from being asleep, and she would look at us and she'd say, this is fantastic. And then she'd fall back asleep again. The other case was a woman who had Alzheimer's and had been in a facility for 8 years. And her husband wanted to bring her home. And so we actually, I talked to them about using Park Nicollet, and Vic Sandler's here, who was the ED for Park Nicollet. And we were able to have them come in and evaluate her. And she was probably stage seven, I think. And so she wasn't verbal. She was there. They would wake her up to feed her. She would go back to bed. It just was not living. And I don't think most people really want to live that way. So got her evaluated with hospice. She was end-stage dementia. Got her onto hospice and brought her home where her husband had made the decision to stop the eating and drinking. And it was so beautiful because I was brought in to do a lot of ritual with the family, and it was a very unusual situation. And in my opinion, as a death doula, I believe it was a very kind situation. Mm. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. We just have like 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I'll just finish the last few slides that just little points I wanted to share, that death is not a medical failure. It can be simple. It is a natural process, and as we all have talked about, it's not linear. How to find a death doula, Annette asked me to make sure that everyone leaves with some information. So as Nina shared, MNDC is a great resource. Newsletter from Barbara Carnes is where I got that list of 10 things. Jane Whitlock, who also was with you in starting the MNDC, she's a local doula. She has a TED Talk, and it's wonderful. And then filling out the 5 wishes. What's the name of the woman who you sent me to do my 5 wishes with? Who does it?
Laura Rydell.
Has anybody worked with Laura Rydell? Laurel? Yes. Okay. So that's a great resource to get your known wishes down and have someone walk you through. I did, like I said, I have some handouts over here. If you want to be on Navigating Elderhood's newsletter, and then here's some marketing. The work I do has always been word of mouth. Recently, I got myself to put it on a note card, so this is the first time handing it out. If you feel like taking one, feel free to do so. But I think I'll just hang out without a microphone and visit with people, if that's okay.
Thank you so much, Corey. That was very informative. But before we go, I want to make sure your question about advanced directives was answered.
It's just more of a statement.
Yeah. Right.
And as a mom of a now 18-year-old, thank you for the reminder, because now you're reminding me to have her fill out one, because she's going to be flying the nest. So, these stages.
So vital.
Yes.
And 5 wishes is just one option. Honoring mm-hmm. Choices Minnesota is another one. You can get all of those online. But what's most important is that you pick the person, not that you love the most. You pick the person that can stand by what your wishes are. I think that's like so important, because, you know, like we also have conversations with our kids who roll their eyes and say, please stop talking about this. But anyway, I think Corey will still be here for a few minutes. Thank you so much for joining this session. I just want to remind you that lunch is in the social hall down the end of the hall. Have a quick lunch, go to the resource fair, and don't forget to turn in your evaluation at the end of the day. That's super important for us for planning for the next conference. And thank you all for being here.